These are the things big media won't tell you.
Anything you say, they write it down, they tape you,
they tweet about it.
Lay off the comedians, okay?
Yeah.
Leave the comedians. We're like the philosophers right now.
With Michelle Marin.
Before we get into the slain deputy Micah Flick here in Colorado Springs, I want to continue the conversation about the Olympics and the whole Kim Jong-un comparison by big media to Ivanka Trump. This is disgusting. Our big media is just pouring this out. I found another article over the break showing North Korean cheerleaders at the Olympics. There are 200 North Korean cheerleaders called the Army of Beauties. I got this from Daily Wire. Says that these women were chosen for their looks and loyalty to the North Korean government. Why is such an oppressive government even allowed to be represented at the Olympics? That's a good question that I have. But here's the deal. Big media is fawning over these women. They show them. They're all dressed in red. They're all in the stands at a hockey game. And they cheer, and they've got the little routines. And at one point in the routine, they hold up masks and cover their face with a mask of Kim Jong-un, the dictator. And in the last segment, we were talking about how big media is comparing his sister, Kim Jong-un, to Ivanka. Jason, you had some interesting thoughts on why they're doing this.
I just, in my mind, if they were, because they're saying this in a favorable tone. Oh, she's just like
yes, they are. It's disgusting.
I don't think that's a favorable tone in the long run. I think they're trying to set it up now, because if they were really favorable, who would they actually pick? They wouldn't have picked a Trump. They would have picked an Obama.
Yeah.
Oh, she's just like Sasha Obama.
Yeah.
Nope. They don't want to associate Obama with a dictator. They're setting it up now, so 6 months from now they can say, "Well, just like the dictator, he's just like the dictator over there." You know, Trump's the dictator, just like Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And I guarantee it.
She's the director. The sister is the director of propaganda and agitation. What a weird.
It is. Yeah.
Agitating the country against itself. It's this cheerleading squad is disgusting, but here's what's worse: big media. NBC posted a picture under the Twitter name NBC Olympics with a screenshot of the 200 cheerleaders swaying, and they wrote, NBC Olympics wrote, "This is so satisfying to watch."
Well, they want that they need socialism. They want everyone to just fall in line, just like North Korea.
Yeah, Lee. And
don't they have a great society, Michelle?
You know, Daily Wire linked to... You know, why are they not focusing on this? There's a they linked to a Mirror article where a 14-year-old North Korean boy was in the political labor camp, probably for wanting to believe something different than them. And he was being fed a handful of corn normally that's used to feed pigs and cows. So a handful of this corn for himself. This is really disgusting. He was so hungry, he noticed vomit on the pavement. And
so
he
just like in Venezuela, they are going around killing cows just so they have food.
I know.
Anything they can eat.
And I saw an article yesterday, they're leaving in droves trying to go into Cambodia because they're so hungry. So, of course, big media doesn't tell you any of this. It's all about the great Kim Jong-un and his...
And his sister.
His sister, who's...
The propagandist.
So anyway, I couldn't not share that. And back to Sheriff's Deputy Micah Flick, who was murdered last Monday. His wife, Rachel, gave a eulogy yesterday at New Life Church. I watched the whole thing. It was 23 minutes. And I just got to say, I was on the Richard Randall Show on Friday. Richard wanted to know who people's heroes were. My heroes were women, Nikki Haley and Sarah Huckabee Sanders. That was who came to mind. I hadn't put much more thought into it. And I think it's because we're so inundated with women of disreputable character, women who aren't heroes, who go around griping, the View, the Women's March, the Hollywood women that have Jane Fonda. We had a segment on with Jane Fonda and Christina Amanpour, where Jane Fonda was approached, one of the film directors tried to sexually harass her, but Jane Fonda wouldn't have it, and she got the part anyway.
She got it anyway.
And it was just, ha, 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 this is so funny. And I just, no, she's not a hero. And I won't even go into her political background. That's not my point. Is we're inundated with women who don't have character that, to me, is worth...
I think you're missing the biggest woman without character, who? Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yeah. Hillary.
Really?
Thank you. So when we see women like Nikki Haley taking on the United Nations with zero fear, she just goes in there and just reads them the Riot Act, and she doesn't hold back. She'll just come out and say, "We're watching you.
We're taking names.
We're taking names."
I love that. That was my favorite quote from her. We're watching and we're taking names.
We're taking names. And then you have Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who she gets out there and she deals with big media every single day. That gal does not get rattled. Not at all. She deals with their antagonistic leading questions. And she, I think on a daily basis, as Senator Lambert said, she dresses them down.
Yes.
With ease. She's not nasty. She just is very matter-of-fact about it and goes about what she has to say again. And these are two very intelligent, articulate women that are missing from big media, Hollywood, everything that we're inundated with in media all around us. So I guess I'm looking for those women as a woman myself. And I can name men too, but they come to mind. And Deputy Micah Flick's wife, she's a widow, she got up and spoke yesterday at New Life for 23 minutes. And you rarely see the kind of strength and composure that she showed in her eulogy. She spoke with grace. She owned that stage. She wasn't, she had no inhibitions whatsoever. She was humorous. She kept her composure incredibly well. While I'm bawling listening to her the first time through, I could hardly contain myself. She loves her deceased husband, loves him, honored him to the nth degree, explained what a funny guy he was, how seriously he took his profession, how seriously he loved his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, how he's an example of heroics. And she started out by thanking the church. Then she went to thank Sheriff Elder. And then one of the deputies was standing behind her. I think her name was Lori. If I got that wrong, I'm sorry. Thanked her friends and thanked the community. Our community. Our community is just amazing. She said that she's been showered with financial assistance, gifts, and meals. And she had, she said that the night before last, they had kind of like a Christmas setting for their kids and open gifts. And she said, anything to ease their pain. Just amazing. And anyway, she kept going, but she kept herself together. A few things, she said that they were married 10 years ago in that church, New Life Church. Her kids were baptized there a few months ago. And she said Micah was just an amazing provider. And if you get a chance, go listen to the audio. Jason and I have compiled a few minutes, about a little under 3 minutes from her 23-minute speech. I just want you to hear what she has to say. Listen to her, because she's got strength that I'm not sure most women would have 5 days after their husband was slain for not even a serious crime. The suspect that was also shot and killed stole a car or something. So this wasn't even worth dying over. It wasn't even worth shooting an officer over. It was no...
I would venture to say that there's probably no reason to shoot an officer.
Thank you.
There's no reason
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying and keeping me on the straight and narrow on that one. So let's just listen to Rachel Flick from her eulogy yesterday. I hope this is an encouragement and an inspiration. And if I ever get the opportunity, I would like to invite Rachel to join me on the show and share more of her strength. I think that's missing from our culture and our narrative, and I would like to introduce it and keep it going. And any way I can do that, I will. Let's listen to her.
A routine op, something they do all the time, highly skilled people, very prepared, and came into an altercation with the suspect. And the suspect opened fire, and Micah literally used his body as a shield and put himself between his killer and his fellow officers. Hmm. And I don't know how you get much more heroic than that.
I don't either. I have two small kids at home and a wife.
His fellow officers on that op said, "Rachel, I think we'd be doing multiple funerals if he hadn't given his life."
Oh, geez. All right. Cut that for a minute. All right. See, I'm getting choked up just even listening to it for the third time around here. We need heroes. We need them. There's so much just filth in the culture. And Micah Flick was a hero, clearly. His colleagues knew it. His wife knew it.
And I want to say to you that it's not confusing why Micah died, because we have a cultural epidemic of a lack of respect for law enforcement and authority. This doesn't have to happen, but I know that there are people watching around the world, and I want to say to you that we have to make a change in the way that we think, in the way that we raise our children. We have to. We need a return to honor. We need a return to men and women who understand what Micah understood in the way that he lived his life every single day. And so I want to challenge and exhort the law enforcement officers who are represented here to live like Micah did, to follow Micah as Micah followed Christ. Do not allow his death to be wasted. We have an issue in our community where people are afraid of law enforcement, and I wanted to come up to you here, and I wanted to show you the impact that this has. This isn't a racial issue. This isn't a gun control issue. This is a heart problem. And we need to recognize our hearts and our culture and our beliefs are part of the problem. It's why my husband is laying here in front of me in a box.
Ouch.
We have one more.
All right.
So I want to say to you, uphold the authority of your badge, not because you can, but as a sacrifice of love for your communities, for your agencies, and for your nation. We love you.
All right. That's just a little bit of what Rachel said yesterday. If you get a chance to listen to her entire eulogy, do it. It's well worth it. You will be inspired by this woman's strength and graciousness. And I offer my prayers for her and her kids as they move forward, grieve, and try to pick up. And for Rachel, as she tries to provide for her family, that's a whole nother ball of wax. So, yeah. Before we go, I do want to comment on, we're going to switch gears here completely. I'm going to go back to the Congress, GOP. A budget was passed over the weekend, and boy howdy, our GOP in majority in the Senate and the House just cannot do anything right, except for the tax bill.
What does that matter if you're going to spend it all in the next 2 years? 2 years!
Yeah. They increased spending over $500 billion over the next 2 years. Who pays for it? Why isn't anyone barking about this? Who pays for it, Jason?
Well, they don't care because they're not paying for it.
No.
Oh, we'll just raise tax. Don't worry about it. We'll just get the little people to pay for it.
And what happened is the Democrats held military spending hostage so they could protect their favorite social spending programs. How does that happen?
I do not understand. How are the Republicans, I thought, after the last shutdown, they would have gotten so much more spine, because it wasn't the Republican shutdown, it was the Schumer shutdown.
I know.
Shut it down again. Sorry, they don't want to pay for the military. That's on them for shutting it down again. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be held hostage to your demand. You want to pay for all this stuff You figure it out.
Oh, golly. Jason, we've got problems here. The two-year deal would lift caps on defense and non-defense spending. Includes
cool. The one we got one thing out of yeah, it. The $500 million. Dollars.
$6 billion to fight the opioid crisis. I'm not sure how government can fight the opioid crisis, but that's a lot of money. I know it's a serious problem.
It is a serious problem, but it's not a problem for the federal government. It's a problem for the state government to take over.
Oh, thank you.
And no, that's why they're just like, no, this is a candy. Like you say, it's a candy store. They're just like, well, it's going into the general fund. And so now all of a sudden Chuck Schumer gets a raise.
$4 billion for college affordability. I've got four kids. Two of them I'm putting through college, and I'm... Are they
a minority of some kind? Because other than that,
no, we don't have.
Guess you're not going to have any of that.
No,
of that money's going to you.
All right, so I just wanted to comment on that—the ongoing frustration with the GOP, and that's just sad to say. It's an ongoing conversation. Before we go, there's a topic I think I want to start touching on regularly, and it's the Me Too topic—the hashtag Me Too. It's basically the sex abuse that just seems to be rampant in our culture. A friend of mine posted on Facebook yesterday, Me Too is one of the best things that's happened to us, and it's one of the worst things that's happened to us. And I could not agree more. I found an article yesterday, again from Daily Wire. This is a tough one. A male rape survivor made a little video about his experience to raise awareness about rape against men. He got pretty much ignored he got brutally raped, and he didn't go asking for it. Like, you know, everyone.
I would say that most people aren't asking to be raped.
Well,
I mean,
that's part of the narrative.
I know
that,
it is
right?
whatever she was wearing or
right.
you. Yes.
Right. Right. He wasn't. According to his story, you know, there was nothing. He had no idea he was getting into this situation, and it wasn't just one person.
Can I venture? It wasn't a female that raped him?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yes.
No. It was horrible. And he said when he reported it to the police, the initial response wasn't the greatest. He said, "I'm not going to lie. I felt I wasn't believed." In that situation, I guess they do pass judgment where they probably shouldn't. Without dealing with males as often as they are dealing with females, maybe they haven't got the same level of compassion as they would. This just bothered me. I'm becoming increasingly aware of not only women sexual abuse victims, but now men, but the children. And prime example is the Michigan State University situation with Larry Nassar, who... Mm-hmm. That's a story, you know, we may talk some about that, but the complicity that Michigan State University had in that situation. And I'm seeing that our culture is becoming a culture where, like this guy said here, this guy that got raped, I feel like the perversion that has overcome our culture, there are opportunists everywhere. There are opportunists in every building, every corner of our culture. It can be low income, medium and middle income, high income, all races, all genders. The perversion is just widespread. And there are opportunists everywhere who are sexually abusing children, men and women. And we aren't keeping up with the perversion. We don't like to talk about it. I'm seeing places like Michigan State University and more where people who know what's going on, they turn their eyes from it, and they can't bring themselves to address it. I don't know why. I don't know if they are just covering their own backsides. They're afraid they're going to get fired, or if they're just too ashamed to talk about it, or if they just are okay with it. I don't know what it is. I can't even remember Penn State.
I would say not even that they're okay with it. They benefit from it. We need to have the Olympics here at this school or what have you. And if we say anything, they're going to take it away.
There you go. So it's what's disturbing me is I'm not seeing it just I run in conservative circles primarily. And I'm seeing even in conservative circles, conservative institutions, churches, schools, everywhere, I am seeing adults turning their eyes and victim blaming victims of sexual abuse. This is where the Me Too has become very important. Children are not getting a voice. In the Larry Nassar case, boy, that judge gave those women a voice. That had been going on a very, very long time.
Yes.
And like I said, there's two sides of this cause. There are the victims who just cry wolf and who aren't really victims, just to gain whatever. So it's a fine line, but I'm going to walk it because there's too much perversion and too many victims are going unheard and there's not justice being applied. And I believe, Rachel Flick said, we need to raise our kids with honor. We do. We need to raise our kids with honor. We also need to open our eyes to what's happening to our kids. And we need to open the narrative and not be afraid to talk about what is happening to our kids and to women and to men.
Well, to not be an accomplice. Because,
yes.
I mean, that's what you are.
When you don't,
if you
yes.
know and you don't say anything, you're afraid of repercussions in any way. No.
Yeah.
We need to get to a point where it's not you're afraid of repercussions. You're afraid for that person, so you speak up.
Yes. Thank you.
You make sure they're heard.
And that's the narrative I want to start encouraging. I want to do my part. I want to do my part to bring this wide open so that when there are real victims of sexual abuse, they have a way to be heard and a way for justice to somehow be addressed.
Yes.
So I'm going to try to incorporate that. It's not going to be the whole emphasis of my show, but it's in the air. I'm seeing it happen. And I can't stand Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I don't even have the quote in front of me. To paraphrase, if you see evil happening and you do nothing about it, that's evil. And I can't do nothing about it. I'm going to address it because I'm seeing children suffering big time from this. And as we saw, the women at Michigan State University, they were silenced. They were ignored. And they've carried this baggage into adulthood. Corey Feldman, his story is just more than I can almost handle sometimes when I think about it. He's about my age, and he's just now trying to uncover the abusers of him and his best friend when he was a child.
To be fair, he hasn't just now. Just now people are paying attention.
Yes.
He's been bringing it up for years, and now people are paying attention because of the Me Too movement.
Yeah. So that's the gist of it. That's kind of my introduction. We're going to have a segment on this, or maybe a half a segment every week, but I'm going to do my part to bring awareness to this and try to influence the conversation. And in conservative circles, because that's generally, I do have liberal listeners and some haters, but I want the core, I want everyone to hear this message, but I want the core of people that listen to understand this is really going on, and we can't turn our eyes, and we can't victim blame anymore. So,
yep.
That's my intro. Lots more to talk about, and we're out of time. It's February 11th, 2018. I'm Michelle Morin, here to tell you what Big Media Won't with my awesome producer, Jason Hunt. We are signing off, and we will talk to you next week after yet another week of unpredictable events to come. Have a great week.